I forgot to
Blog Talk Radio.
Justice. We're going to talk all kinds of things. We're going to laugh a little bit, and Rodney Lee won't let me cry anymore, but we're still going to cry sometimes. Let me tell you, we've got some great things going on today, and we've got some things that are kind of sad, and we're going to cover all those. We're going to have a great time. With no further ado, I'm going to bring Rodney Lee. Rodney, I've got a special guest calling in a few minutes. Somebody very, very special has been out there doing campaign commercials that have been going viral. So we look forward to that. How are you doing?
His eyes.
Crap. I tried to play some theme music for myself. Scott, but I failed. I'm going to try once more. Hold on a second. I'm learning the technology. Hold on. Here we go.
His eyes, they closed, and his last breath spoke. He had seen all to be seen. A life once full, now an empty vase, with the blossoms on his early grave. Walk away, me boy, walk away, me boy, and by morning we'll be free. Wipe that golden tear from your mother, dear, and raise what's left of the flag for me. Then the rosary beads, count them, 1, 2, 3, fell apart as they hit the floor. In our garb of black, we must pay respect to the color we're born to mourn. Walk away, me boys, walk away. But morning we'll be free. Wipe the golden tear from your mother, dear. There's what's left of the flag for me.
All right. That's not bad for the second try, huh?
Not bad at all. You always make me laugh.
I couldn't figure out how to fade it out, though. Anyway, I don't know when you want to bring your guest on, but I think you should bring them on very soon, because if you don't, my head's going to explode, and I'll tell you why. I'll just give you a little primer. It's over this David Bratt thing, this Eric Cantor thing. Cantor, this big wuss that I've been screaming about for how long? How long have I been screaming about this guy, Scott, this so-called majority leader of the Republican Party, this establishment, this so-called Republican? He's not a Republican at all. All he is a big, he's a piece of crap. He's down there in Florida, and who's he meeting with, Scott Osborne? Who's he meeting with? He's meeting with with these Main Street Republican Partnership Super PAC Who are they? They're a bunch of left-wing labor union, George Soros, bunch of communists, bunch of liberal, rich liberals giving money to these Republicans to defeat conservatives with their goal, not just their goal, their stated reason for being is to destroy Tea Party candidates, conservative candidates, and it's headed up by this idiot, this former Republican congressman from Ohio, Steve LaTourette. Steve LaTourette, this, I don't even know what to call it. This guy, him and his family getting rich, destroying good conservative candidates, giving millions and billions, millions of dollars to these pussies that are running against good conservative candidates. And he goes on MSNBC. Scott, did I tell you this story? I don't care. I'm telling you again. He goes on MSNBC. He goes on the Lawrence O'Donnell show, and he says, the Main Street Republican Partnership Super PAC, our goal is to destroy Tea Party candidates, okay? And guess who meets with them? Guess who has a confab, a little powwow, down there, the Ritz-Carlton, in an island in Florida? Eric Cantor. Well, Eric Cantor, what happened to you on Tuesday? Scott Osborne, tell me, what happened to Eric Cantor on Tuesday? I'm curious.
He got his butt handed to him.
That's right! And was it the Tea Party groups? No. It was Tea Party people, grassroots Tea Party people, because guess what? That's what the Tea Party is, Scott Osborne. Am I telling you anything you don't know? No!
You sure are.
It was never about groups or leaders or, giant stadiums full of organizations. That's what the liberals would have you believe. This is a true, and always has been, a true grassroots movement. The Tea Party is an assemblage of actual Americans that have had enough of the Eric Cantors of the world, who had millions of dollars, by the way, from these LaTourettes, these LaTourette syndromes, these left-wingers, these associates of George Soros. Can you believe that a Republican would take any money from George Soros? A Nazi collaborator. That's what he says he is. I'm not making that up. We got to put up with that, Scott Osborne? No. I forgot what I was doing here, as usual. You better bring this guest on. I'm telling you.
We will here in a second. I'm waiting for Teresa to be able to be calling in. She's going to call in. She's got a question for our guest. But I want to tell you, you know what, Rodney, I'm glad you brought that up. Because I've watched a lot of discussion about Tea Party. Did Tea Party have anything to do with it? Did Tea Party not? Brad came out and said, really, the Tea Party really didn't help him. And I want to define exactly what went on here. And I want, folks, I want when you think of the word Tea Party to think of the word Kleenex. Because Kleenex at one point was just a brand. But now we use the word Kleenex to describe anything that we pull out of to wipe our nose with, no matter what brand it is, or Scott brand, whatever brand it is, but we use the word Kleenex as a generic term. And the Tea Party helped Brat. but the national Tea Party organizations were absolutely no help to him whatsoever. But he had hundreds of people on the ground that were Tea Party in thought. Now, what does that mean? That means they believe in the Constitution. That believes they mean lower taxes. That means they believe that the large government, the federal government, cannot micromanage, and a lot of things are better handled at the state level, at the local level. That's what it means to be a Tea Party. I've probably been brought me to maybe 3 Tea Party meetings in my entire lifetime. But I consider myself aligned with those thoughts and those means. I also call myself a Frederick Douglass Republican for the same reason. I called myself a Reagan Republican. And so, folks, let me tell you, and Rodney, you and I talked about this on the phone. Don't be sending your money to groups. Send your money to your candidates. If you like a candidate, send him the money directly. Don't let it go through the organizations, because most of the time it goes around and around. You know, it's like, kind of like the IRS collecting your tax money. For every dollar that they collect, it takes 30 cents on that dollar just to collect it. There's a lot of waste, fraud, and abuse that goes on beyond that 30 cents on the dollar. And so, did he have Tea Party help? Sure he did. He had a lot of people that aligned themselves with the Tea Party. They got out and beat the doors. They put out signs. They made phone calls. They got on the social media networks, and they helped him out that way. They talked about him to their friends. And it wasn't just an easy race, folks. Let me tell you. It was a 10-point spread. Eric Cantor got it handed to him. And they were not expecting that. They were not looking forward to that. I believe we're going to have more of that, because it's growing. This disconcern that the American people have with their leadership, especially in Washington, is growing, because we're tired of the nonsense on both sides. And it goes on both sides. You've got some good people on both sides, and you've got some bad people on both sides. There's all kinds of reasons, if you were a Democrat, to be very, very unhappy with a good portion of your own people for other reasons. We don't agree ideologically, but we do agree on one thing, and that's good hard work, and that's not playing the game of politics. So, Rodney, I'm going to pass it back to you for any further on that, and then I'm going to bring in our special guest here real quick. We're looking for Teresa to call before we do that, because I know she wants to talk to our special guest, so, and it looks like she's there. So, Rodney, I'll hand it back to you, and then I'll take it back here in a minute.
I'm sorry, Scott. What were you saying about Kleenex?
All right, Rodney, we've got our special guest standing right here. You know, she's been making commercials. And Teresa B., she says, you know, you need to have that commercial maker on there for a few minutes. So this is my beautiful niece, Amelia. She is 8 years old, and she made a Sid Miller commercial this last week that went viral. Everybody was passing it around. Sid Miller got a big kick out of it. Scott Turner, who is going to be our next Speaker of the House here in Texas, got a big kick out of it and appreciated it. Millie, welcome to Contending for Truth Radio. How are you doing?
Good.
Very, very good. Did you have a statement you wanted to make?
Huh?
A statement?
Oh, yes. Hi, this is Amelia Martinez, creator of Sid Miller Commercial. I just would like to say how much I thought of it. Well, first, I thought when I said go politics, I felt like a dork. I know y'all think, but that was the best part. But no, it was not. I like the Scott Turner part. Sid Miller, if you listen to this, I hope you loved it. Well, y'all have a good night. Bye. Back to y'all's talking. Once again, Amelia Martinez. Have a good one. Before I go, any questions?
And Teresa Bree, are you there?
I am here, and I'm so excited to finally talk to Millie, who makes the Sid Miller commercials. I just have to ask you, how did you come up with the idea for the Sid Miller commercial?
Well, first, I made my TV, and then my uncle says, why don't you make a Sid Miller commercial? And I just thought of some words, put them all together, and we made it on Unky's phone and put it on YouTube.
I thought it was great. And the best part was, go politics. I thought it was the best part.
Yeah, I felt like a dork.
No, it was perfect. And then I told all my friends to find your uncle on Facebook and friend him.
Yeah. Well, okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Teresa, and we want to give her a big shout out. You know, it's really kind of fun, Rodney, because my three nieces do see everything that I do, and they've always rooted for the candidates I was rooting for a long time. They were running around chanting Herman Cain, Zach Poskovich, Dan Hughes, and there was a time when they were running around chanting Rodney Lee Conover as well, and all the other candidates, and they get involved. And let me tell you, folks, the reason why this is important: get your kids involved. Get them involved. Let them know what's going on. You know, I was talking with a friend back east who was wanting to know, you know, why is there so many things going on today, and it just keeps happening. And it's because so many people are not involved with what's going on. They come home, they sit down, they watch television, they go to bed, they don't pay attention to current events. And so a lot of the things that go on that we in the choir see going on every day, we see that all the time. But they just don't know what's going on. If you said Benghazi, they would think you were talking about some Italian food. So with that, Rodney, what did you think about that special guest?
That was fantastic. I love it. I wish her all the success in the world. It sounds like she's doing great, though, without any well-wishing from me. But I do wish her great continued success. I think that's fantastic.
Well, and we've got another guest, and Brenda. I'm going to bring Brenda on, and then we'll let her tell her story real quick, and then I know, Rodney, you're jumping to get back into this Dan Bratt thing and the politics. But you know, for a long time, we did a show here on Contending for Truth, as well as over at the Underground Hard Drive when I first started in Blog Talk Radio, about Don Miller. And Don Miller was a man who was imprisoned wrongfully for 16 years. For a crime that, when you look at the evidence, it never even happened. It never even happened. Now, his accuser had accused six men before him of rape and accused one man after him of rape. And we fought real hard, and every Thursday night for a long time, that was the show that was in this place that we've got Conover U. Every Thursday night, for 3 years, I got on with Steve Williams and Bob Green and Tammy Silver up in Wisconsin, and we talked about Don Miller. And Don Miller came home this last Christmas. And I'm going to tell you, Rodney, it was a party and a half. We did some music playing on Facebook. We did some shouting and jumping and screaming and crying because we'd worked so hard. And Pat and Norm Miller, his parents, deserved to have their son home. And during that course of time, Don Miller's son committed suicide to try and bring national recognition to his case. But it worked, and we've got this kind of a situation going on a lot. We've also discussed a lot on here, and the IRP6, they had a show on here on Contending for Truth Radio for a while. They do their own show now. They've got their own show on their own network, and they do a show on Tuesday and on Thursday. We talk about them occasionally. And wrongful convictions are is just as important as our political problems. And I've always said we've got a three-pronged effort we have to make if we want to save this country. Number one, we've got huge problems in the churches. Got huge problems in the churches. They're the foundation of our society. We've got huge problems in our political realm. We've got anywhere from economics to what goes on in Washington, D.C., what goes on in Sacramento, what goes on in Austin, and even down to the local government. And the third problem we've got is in our justice system. We have got a horrendous situation in our country now of a lot of wrongful convictions going on. Judges making decisions not based on the laws. And boy, I have to give our justice system a big hand, because for hundreds of years we've had a great justice system that's tried to be fair. But we still have situations that are not good. And Brenda wants to come on and give us quickly her story, and I'll tell you what we'll do is Brenda, we'll dedicate a show, we'll set up a show where we can spend the whole 2 hours talking about your situation. Give me some time to go in and really get into the crux, the meat. I've found the Justice for Joel. Go to Justice for Joel on Facebook. But Brenda, you know, you just popped in there right as I was getting ready to start the show. I actually, Rodney, I thought it was you calling in. I just clicked up there there and said, hi, and then I realized that's not Rodney. So Brenda and I talked for a few minutes right before the show. So I want to hand it to you, Brenda, and kind of give us a brief rundown of exactly what happened, and then we'll get the word out, and then we'll, like I said, we will sit down and plan a show, a special show based on Joel's story and get the word out.
First of all, I'd like to say hello to each and every one of you and thank you for what you do for people. But my son did or was forced to shoot this young man. My son had a 2-year criminal justice degree. The young man that was shot was a relative of the arresting officer. Things came up missing. And because we don't have VUCU money, there's not a damn thing we can do.
Well, and can you give us just a little bit of a rundown of exactly what happened and how long this has been going on and where you're at in the case, so on and so forth.
Well, we just filed our first federal appeal this week. This happened 5 years ago. My son was on his way to my house when he turned onto a road. There were two gentlemen in the road. He stopped, not thinking anything, party going on. The one kid come up to the driver's door, opened it, started punching my son, pulling him out of the vehicle. When my son got to his feet, he shoved him to the rear, drew his gun, and dialed 911. The 911 call is on Justice for Joel on YouTube. According to my cell phone record, it's missing 20 to 30 seconds. The knife the kid had is missing. There was a video turned over to police that they no longer have. The arresting officer was a relative. The young man had a blood alcohol level of 0.14 and hydrocodone at recreational use levels. We knew previously of this family. I live in Erie, PA. It's not a big town. But it's just awful the way our system is ran.
Well, and it is awful, and we want you to be able to get the word out, and we're gonna help you do that. We've done that a lot. Teresa B. that was on there was a big supporter of Don Miller, and let me tell you, in fighting what we did with Don Miller, there were a lot of days where we just felt like we were just spinning our wheels. But even though we had Wisconsin's Innocence Project behind us, and we had a bunch of different people, it just seemed like in that small little town. And I understand it, sometimes it feels lonely. Sometimes you feel like you're the only one out there saying anything. I'll tell you, we're in a different day and an age than 20 years ago. We've got social media, and we can put the pressure on and we can get the story out. So I want to encourage everybody, Brenda, to go to Justice for Joel. Just type that in. I already found it there on Facebook. Justice for Joel, just search in the Facebook link and you'll find that. Like the page, get the information. And like I say, Brenda, we will set up, I've got your phone number. We'll get in contact with you here in the next day or so. And we will set up, I've got different shows going on. We will set up a time when we can sit down and maybe get some other people that are involved and really give some effort to this story, and I will reach out to some connections that I've got that have helped with the Don Miller show. We've got some great people and some great places where you can get out and get your show or get your information out. So one more time, that's Justice for Joel. Search that on the internet, on Facebook, and find that link. And Brenda, I want to thank you for calling in. Glad you did. I'm glad you did, and we will see what we can do about this. You know, Rodney, doesn't it just really disgust you sometimes when we've got situations? We got the greatest country in the world. We are an exceptional country. We have done so many good things. But sometimes things just don't work out right. Sometimes they don't work out right politically. Sometimes they don't work out right in the church, and sometimes they don't work out right with justice.
Yeah, that's a strange story, especially when you see where the law enforcement officer was, a relative of the guy. That right there, should raise a huge red flag in the case. And it's odd that they aren't immediately looking into that and taking that into serious consideration.
So very true. So very true. Well, and so, folks, we're going to go on to the next. And, you know, Rodney, we've got some interesting things going down. I want to tell you, I want to talk for a couple of minutes about my experience this last weekend. Because I sat and I watched an incredible...
You were at the Republican convention in Texas.
Yeah, I was. You. And you know what? For somebody who loves politics as much as I do, I've been enjoying politics since I was a young kid. Preteen, I was enjoying politics. I watched Ronald Reagan get inaugurated. I had a grandmother who, like me, with the girls, talked politics with me and explained things to me. She explained certain things to me. She explained to me that, you know, the larger your organization, the less control and more waste, fraud, and abuse you have. She says, so when you're dealing with a large federal government, she said, our founders were smart enough to know that federal government couldn't control everything, so they made a constitution that said, we will take care of this small amount of things, and everything else we will leave up to the states. And she says it works really well that way. And there were some other points that she made, and she invested some time in me and established a love for politics. And that love for politics has gone on for decades now. Of course, I'm a social activist. I'm a political activist, having a great time supporting candidates all over the country, supporting candidates here in Texas. But this is the first time, I'm going to tell you, I ever got to go to a convention. In California, they were always too far away. It was a big deal to go. Here, I drove across town, and I was there. And I'm going to tell you, Rodney, I had more fun than anybody could imagine. But I want to tell you something about that convention. With Herman Cain, I learned to feel momentum. And I felt some momentum at that convention like you would not believe. There was some excitement in that group. You know, we got Wendy Davis here. She's trying to run for governor, and she's polling at like 36% right now. It's insane. Battleground Texas has come in here, and they tried to do what they were going to do, and they've really basically failed. But let me tell you, folks, there was a momentum and a feeling out there. And speaking of Sid Miller, he rocked the stage. And many other people got up there, and absolutely, we're going to fight. Texas is going to fight for freedom all the rest of the way. And it was not a couple of days after that convention was over and that momentum, all of a sudden, Eric Cantor got toppled. So, Rodney, I think Texas had something to do with Eric Cantor falling over. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about it. There was a real surprise. I mean, everybody got caught. I mean, I was watching. Well, I'll give you a great example. I'm watching The Five today. It's my favorite show, The Five. And. Or not today, but yesterday, you know, I watched it on the DVR. Every person on The Five agreed on one thing, and that is nobody knew who this guy's name was. Nobody had heard of him. It wasn't on their radar screen. That race was not something that was going to have any sort of contention. This David Bratt, I got to admit to you, buddy, I didn't know who he was, and I pay attention. I didn't know who David Bratt was. And Eric Cantor's pollsters, and I'm not saying they're incompetent. Don't get me wrong. Eric Cantor's pollsters had him 25 points up the day before, or, you know, a couple days before. And so, yeah, they're over at the steakhouse ordering beers. And spending a lot of money, apparently. But you know what you can't do? You can't pull a ground game. You can't do it. It's impossible. And that's what happened to Eric Cantor. He got ground gamed. He spent $1 million or whatever he spent, and he kept half of his money for the general election. And this David Bratt, you know, he had Laura Ingraham. He had the great one, Mark Levin. And he had the people. And they were seeing images of children pouring over the border. They were seeing images of Eric Cantor and that phony smile
And they were like, you know what? We've had enough. Now, there was some other factors.
Low turnout, that always helps. You know, the people with the grassroots ground game, because the overconfidence of the person that's supposed to win, you know, the, what do you call, what is that word? You know, the front runner, as it were. You know, if people think, you know, you're going to win, your guy's going to win, and the day of voting it rains, then they go, eh, my guy's going to win. I don't want to go out in the rain. Do you know what I mean? But if your guy is the underdog, if you're, you know, you're really going to fight for your guy, and it rains, you're going to go, hey, I'm getting out there. I don't care if it's raining. I don't care if it's, you know, whatever. I'm going to go out and I'm going to vote. That always helps the underdog. But let me tell you, this guy won by 11 million votes or something like that. It wasn't, this was not a squeaker. You can't blame this on immigration. You can't blame this on amnesty. You can't blame this on, oh, you know, it was the Tea Party groups. And, ah, you got to. No. This guy kicked his ass, buddy. There was no, oh, it's because Democrats voted. No, 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 no. He cleaned his clock. He handed him his ass. And it was a Tea Party candidate. It was a true Republican. They said, oh, well, you know, we can't primary a Republican. I tell you, Scott, I love it. I love it. These pundits, these idiots that say, well, we shouldn't waste money on these candidates who don't have a chance. Don't have a chance, huh? How about kicking Eric Cantor's ass with the full force of the Republican establishment behind him, the stupid super PAC, where there are millions of labor union money behind them, these jerks. Ha! Screw you! George Soros, kiss my ass. Why don't you go back to Nazi Germany, you fascist? Why don't you take your ill-gotten money? Why don't you take this guy? I'm telling you, Scott, you better shut me up now or my head's going to pop off and hit the ceiling. I hope it pops right back onto my body so I can scream it at you some more. This guy with his hedge funds, you know, George Soros, when America does bad, when things go into the crapper, he makes money. That's what kind of guy he is. Have you ever played craps? Scott Osborne, you ever go to Vegas and play craps? Everybody gets around a table. You're all in the same boat. You're playing against the house. And then there's some that comes up and he puts his money on the don't pass line. All right? That means if the guy rolling does bad, he wins. That's the kind of guy George Soros is. He bets on the don't pass line. He bets that America will do bad. He bets that things will go in the crapper. And that's what kind of guy this punk is. He's sitting there identifying Jews for the Nazis so they can take them and gas them. That's what kind of prick this guy is. Excuse my French. How can Republicans take money from that? But they do. And then Eric Cantor's down in Florida meeting with these guys. God, Scott. About
well,
time.
You know, I think we've got a way to beat this. And, you know, I'm going to take it from the leadership in Washington, D.C. I want to take it to the leadership in Austin for a few minutes. Because on a large scale, it goes on in Washington, D.C., but on a smaller scale, it goes on in our state houses. And we're fighting this right now. Now, Amelia mentioned Scott Turner. Scott Turner is one of the finest men I have met. He is one of our representatives here in the state of Texas. I've had an opportunity to meet and shake his hand about three times now and visit with him a little bit. He took some good quality time with Savannah and spent about 10, 15 minutes just talking with her. And we want to run him. We want him to be the Speaker of the House in Austin. And you know, Rodney, you know me. I'm always supporting, trying to find a candidate to support, but living where I was in California, my local candidates weren't always easy to support. So I'm used to just running around, you know, I support this candidate up in Minnesota because Teresa's supporting him. I supported you down in California even when I moved to Texas. I was supporting Sid Miller before I ever moved to California. Well, this last couple of weeks, I thought, you know, I better look at my own district now that I live in Texas and see, I've got to find out who my representative is because it's my job to help him get behind Scott Turner for Speaker of the House. And I found my representative. His name is Kenneth Sheets. He's a pretty good man. He's firm on the Second Amendment. He's firm on pro-life. He is firm on a number of other very important issues, socially, economically, as far as sovereignty goes. He's very firm on these issues. But then I got to looking at what his record is. He's been in there since 2011, and he started out with an A-plus from Empower Texans, Michael Quinn Sullivan's group here in Texas that's a very important group. And then he went down to a D-minus. He went down to a D-minus, folks. Now, how does that happen? How does that happen? And I spent hours this week working on this. And what I figured out exactly, here's what happens. He's in a district that's really, really hard to win. Very, very difficult district to win. He won, but it was not easy. And he wants to win again. Well, how does he win again? Well, he's got Joe Strauss up there, the Speaker of the House that we've got right now, that is a bozo, that says, I'll tell you what, you vote with me on these certain bills, and I'll make sure that we get you the money so that we can help you win. And so that's what Kenneth Sheets does. He turns around, he votes on these bills, and then all of a sudden, those of us who were hoping that we're going to have a good, solid conservative in there, turns around and he's not anymore. He's failing Empower Texans, and it's crazy. So what do we have to do about that? How do we accomplish the task of fixing that? Because we have that happening over and over and over again. That's how we end up with a Bob Corker up in Tennessee, and Lame Alexander up in Tennessee as senators. They started out okay, but by the time they get through the Washington, D.C. process, they're mutilated because of following the money. They need the money. So here's what we do, folks, and here's what I'm going to do with Kenneth Sheets. I'm going to go down and I'm going to talk to Kenneth Sheets. I'm going to say, listen, I like what you have to say about yourself. You look like you're a solid conservative, but here's the situation. You got into Austin, Texas, and you started voting crazy. Why is that? I can tell you why it is. Because you want to win next time, and you were relying on Joe Strauss to help you out. I got a better idea, Mr. Sheets. I got a better idea. Why don't you let me help you put together a grassroots team here in Mesquite who will help make sure you win? Then you don't have to worry about Joe Strauss. Then you can go ahead and do what you need to do. You can vote your conscience instead of voting with the play in the politics. But in order to do that, if you want to have a bunch of grassroots support, if you want to have grassroots support like David Bratt had that defeated Eric Cantor, then you've got to stick to your guns. You've got to stick to your principles. You can't be wavering. You can't be voting for this bill and that bill just because it's going to get you something. You've got to vote your conscience, and you've got to vote right. You've got to get back on track, and we can save you. Or we can find somebody else to primary and get rid of you. And let me tell you, folks, what I just did was I put it on everybody else's shoulders, didn't I? Folks, we got to get out and we got to help these candidates. It takes a lot of work. David Bratt won because people cared enough to get out and spread the word. That was all it came down to, folks. It was as simple as that. They got out and they knocked on doors. They made phone calls. They left flyers around. They talked to their neighbors. They organized. They spread on social media. And so when it came down to the vote, when it came down to that night of voting, more people voted for David Bratt than voted for the incumbent. And let me tell you, that is huge, folks, within itself. It's almost impossible to beat an incumbent. It's hard. Name recognition's all messed up. Money's all messed up. Eric Cantor spent $1 million to David Bratt, $76,000. But it can be done. And, folks, if we will get out and we'll make contact with these guys, and if we'll let them know, we'll give them the help, bypass this money coming back from Austin, that's craziness, then we can accomplish the task and we can win this. Otherwise, what we can do is this. Keep supporting good candidates and we get 100 candidates in there that are good because we saw that they were good during the campaign, and then within 2 years, 80% of them are playing the game. And you've got 10%, 20% left that are still trying to fight and stand on their principles. That's our problem, folks. That's what happens in Washington, D.C. These guys get to D.C., and they get involved in the establishment, and the establishment says, well, we'll help you get reelected, and here's the money, but you got to vote with me. Well, then we have all kinds of crazy votes. What do you think, Rodney Lee?
Well, I hope this is not just a freak show because of the turnout. I hope it's a real wave. You know, I hope it's some momentum. I hope that what you're feeling, Scott, is true momentum, not just a tingle up your leg like Chris Matthews. I hope it's the real deal. I hope people will, you know, take it as, you know, something real, and I hope they don't relax. I hope they keep it going because 2014 is really critical. I think it's a critical moment in the nation's history. I know people say that, and the people might think that's cliche, but I don't. I think it's a real – I think the tipping point's already happened, personally. So, you know, I think 2014 is we got to start tipping back to where it was. And if you think that it's not important, things will get worked out, the pendulum will swing back, blah, blah, blah. No, the pendulum doesn't swing back once you reach the tipping point. Yeah, for a very long time, the pendulum swings back and forth, sure. But these Maoists, they've been chipping away for 50 years now, you know, for as long as I've been alive. They've been chipping away at some the founding principles. I mean, take a look at what's been going on here. Now, we're not even fighting the Democrats anymore. We're not fighting liberals. We're not fighting the Marxists. We got a guy in office. It'd be one thing if we would just be pointing at the White House and going, hey, this guy's ruling by fiat. He's ignoring the separation of powers. He's rewriting legislation willy-nilly. He's just deciding what laws he's going to enforce and what not enforce. He's letting go terrorists illegally without notifying Congress, without following any sort of law. He's completely lawless. He's opening the border and saying, hey, bring your children in. You know, we got to save these children from El Salvador or whatever. They're bringing in 60,000 cases of tuberculosis, I hear, they're estimated. Well, you know what? I have a soft spot for kids that are sick. Don't get me wrong. But we're not even fighting that, Scott. We're not even trying to do something about President Obama. We're fighting the Republican Party. We're busy trying to get the Republican Party to at least acknowledge that the Constitution's being ignored. These are the guys that in 2010, the grassroots Tea Party movement rose up and put these guys back into the majority in the House of Representatives for one purpose, and for one purpose only, and that was to get rid of Obamacare. That was the driving force of the Tea Party. And you know what these guys did? They not only didn't get rid of Obamacare, they enabled it. And now their stated position is that we're not going to do anything to repeal it. We're going to tweak it a little bit. And we're going to use it to hammer Democrats over the head and take back the Senate. That's the only plans they have for Obamacare. What? Well, how can we trust them on amnesty when they're busy working with the Chamber of Commerce and the Republican Main Street Partnership, left-wing labor unions, and the Obama administration? They are doing everything they can, Scott Osborne, to get an amnesty bill passed. Scott, anything, any immigration reform bill or so-called immigration reform bill passed is amnesty. Why do I say that? Be-
because we have an administration that has no interest in enforcing immigration law. Therefore, any immigration reform bill is amnesty, even if they don't pass one. This guy clearly is declaring an amnesty by executive order. Look what's going on this week. What does this guy need to do? Let me ask you, Scott Osborne. What does Barack Obama have to do before a Republican in power, in leadership position, will go, you know, I think he might be breaking the law? What does he have to do? Does he got to shoot them? Does he got to knock over a liquor store?
I don't think that would work. And, you know, we got Teresa is going to laugh, but Teresa and I have been talking about the House of Cards falling now for 2 years. I really thought 2 years ago, I didn't even think he'd get elected. But they don't. They just keep letting it go on and on and on and on. He's made the dumbest trade in the whole wide world. He's encouraged the border. He's just opened up the floodgates, basically. He has done everything in the world, and I'll tell you, it all comes down to, here's why, folks. We got too many people that are not awake. We've got too many uninformed voters. We got too many people in this country that are running around. They have no clue that any of this is going on. I think even if most Democrats understood what was really, really going on, they would be yelling in the streets. I don't think they know. The mainstream media doesn't tell them, and most people get their news from just a little bit of news on the mainstream media. Most people, Rodney, come home. They go to work. They really don't like to talk about politics with their friends. They come home. They sit down on the couch and watch a couple of sitcoms, watch a couple of cop shows. Then they go to bed, and they don't. Like I said earlier, they think Benghazi is an Italian food dish. I don't know. I don't know what it's going to take for the Republican leadership to finally say we've got to do something. I do know we've got a few in there. I've got four confidence that Trey Gowdy's going to get loud. I don't always agree with the decisions Trey's made, but I'm going to tell you, boy, is he a bulldog after what's going on in Benghazi. I really believe Dianne Feinstein is fuming right now. I've watched Dianne Feinstein, she's been a senator my entire life out in California, and I don't agree with her on 90% of the issue. I will say this, she is a little bit more of a hawk on foreign policy, but I will say this about Dianne Feinstein. She is intellectually honest. If she does not agree with her party, she'll be the first one to stand up and say something. She would be furious right now. And I'll tell you, if what you're seeing is Dianne Feinstein furious, can you imagine what's going on behind the scenes? I know that Nancy Pelosi, even nutty Nancy Pelosi, is furious about this release. I just don't know. I just keep thinking, Rodney, that the House of Cards is going to eventually topple. I just keep hoping.
I don't mind that people are not that informed. Yeah, I know that's crazy sounding, but it doesn't bother me. As long as people have a fundamental sense of what's right and wrong, I'm cool with it. And if you can pull the lever for what's right and wrong, I'm good to go. What bothers me is you have Republicans in sheep's clothing. Or I know that doesn't make sense, but you know what I'm saying. You've got guys like Eric Cantor and John Boehner meeting with Nazi sympathizers, okay? That's my problem, that you've got so-called Republicans who are evil. That's right. They are supposed to be the firewall between us and the Marxists. They're supposed to be looking out for us, and what are they doing? They're aligning themselves with the Chamber of Commerce and schmucks like Mark Schmuckerberg to enact this amnesty to legalize, oh, they say 11 million. No! 20 million, 25 million, 50 million over the next 20 years. People who are unskilled and illiterate in their own country. Imagine. Oh, well, what are we going to do with 90-year-old granny who's been here for 50 years? Well, I don't know, because that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about legalizing 30 to 50 million unskilled, illiterate people who will work for pennies and be happy about it because they're in the greatest country known to man now. And guess what it does? It suppresses all wages. There are a lot of companies, in fact, most companies, will not hire an illegal alien. The vast majority of companies will never hire illegal labor. They won't do it. Just based on principle, they won't do it. Or maybe they're afraid of getting caught. I don't know. They would never do it. But you know what? The threat that they could hire illegal labor weakens the bargaining chip of the laborer, the legal laborer. If you go in looking for a job and you're negotiating for an hourly wage and the man or woman hiring you has the option of hiring an illegal laborer, your wage automatically gets suppressed. And that's a fact. Now, if that person hiring actually might or actually does hire illegal labor, it gets suppressed further. Because now you're competing with somebody that could care less about benefits, could care less about a nice house. We're competing against a third world nation. My God, have you ever been to Mexico? I don't care if people call me racist. This is not a racist statement. I'm not talking about Cancun. I'm talking about Mexico. It blows. That's right. It sucks. You wouldn't live there for all the money. Oh, my word. Why do you think people are streaming across the border? We ain't streaming across going that way unless it's to party for a couple nights. Be honest. Go to East L.A. and ask yourself, you want to live like that? Go ahead. Live like that. Because the whole place is going to be like that eventually. I don't know, Rodney, you're a racist. Okay. I don't care. Call me a racist. But I'm not. I'm talking about standard of living. I'm not calling them. I'm not talking about ethnicity or skin color. It's got nothing to do with it. I don't want to live in Singapore either. That blows. Actually, I've never been there. Sorry, Singapore. But you get my point. Where was I? I'll tell you where I was. We'll have to think about it for a minute. Here's the point. We're not fighting the enemy anymore. We're fighting our own party. We're fighting so-called Republicans. We're fighting establishment GOP. We're spending all of our time trying to point out that the Republicans are propping up Obamacare because they want to win elections with it. The American public be damned. So what? People are dying of cancer because they're having to switch over to the state system of Obamacare. So what? Hey, we can get back to Senate. I don't see Republicans doing anything about Common Core. Do you, Scott? No. It's people like Scott Osborne are doing something about about Common Core. I don't see John Boehner doing anything about it. Why? Because he can use it like a hammer to win elections. They only care about money and power, getting back to Senate, so they can get rewarded by their statist friends.
and the stupid Chamber of Commerce. Who runs that place, Scott? Have you looked into that?
No, I haven't, but boy, they've gone off the deep end, too. That's for sure.
And now, amnesty is a done deal. Canter schmanter. Everybody thinks, I heard it today 1,000 times, buddy. Oh, well, immigration reform is done. No, it's not. They are resolute, my friend. In fact, this whole cancer thing, that's just you rattled the cage. You stuck the pit bull in the eye with a sharp stick by beating Cantor. That's what you did. Who's going to replace him? McCarthy? Tell me. What did they say? Give me the 911 or the 411, whatever that is on that. Who's going to step in there?
Well, we've got Jordan from Ohio.
Who?
Jordan from Ohio, and McCarthy is what it looks like is left. McCarthy's declared that he's going to run, and Jordan's about ready to step into the ring. And I have not looked up Jordan yet to see exactly where he stands, but I do know in cost he's got some good support.
Well, McCarthy's a douchebag, and this other guy, Sessions, I used to love him, but he's bad on immigration. Did I lose you?
No, I'm here. I've just got a girl standing here talking to me. Yes, Mill?
Peter, my makeup stand is.
Oh,
no,
hi,
I do
sweetie.
Not.
Who is that?
Yeah, that's Millie. Say hi to Rodney.
Hi.
Hi, sweetie. How are you? Is it time for bed?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, you sound awful young.
They're looking for makeup.
When I was your age, I would have been up under the covers with a flashlight reading a book.
That's right.
What grade are you in?
Oh, she just left. She is going into fourth grade.
Fourth grade?
Yeah.
About 8 years old?
Getting old, Rodney. The older they get, the older I get.
All right. Well, anyway, my point is that we're fighting the Republican Party because they're not Republicans anymore. This guy, David, what's his name? Brett. He's a Republican, okay? He's an economics professor. He believes in free markets, okay? He believes in the Constitution, all right? That's a Republican. That's not an extremist. What if it were the extremist all the time? Oh, the Tea Party, they're taking over the Republican Party. Well, I hope so. Oh, I remember when I was out at the Restoration Weekend. I'll never forget this. I'm sitting at the bar, minding my own business, Scott. And up waddles this woman, this young woman, a nice person from Canada. Oh, my God, the Canada, you know? It's enough to drive you nuts. And you got to shut up. I'm telling you, you meet a young woman from Canada, just got to shut up. Shut your mouth. I'm telling you, Scott Osborne. Sure enough. Oh, what are you doing here? Well, I'm speaking at Restoration Week. Oh, you're a Republican. What are you, one of those Tea Party guys? Well, I look at her and I said, oh, you mean those people that believe in liberty, the Constitution, and free markets? What, are you kidding me? That's what I said to her. She kind of knew I was joking. But anyway, the last thing you want to do is get in an argument about health care. And so she's on and on about the health care. I said, listen. You guys in Canada, you got your own version of Obamacare up there, don't you? She goes, what do you mean? I said, well, they're up there in Toronto. You got if you like your crackhead mayor, you can keep him. That didn't go over too well. Anyway, people that back Obama and this stupid Obamacare. That's right, stupid. It's stupid.
people that back Obamacare, they all, when they get their ass kicked in a simple debate, like they always do, they always fall back on the same thing. Ah, you're Republicans. You don't got nothing. You don't have an alternative. But when you repeal Obamacare, what would you replace it with? And I always say, well, how about my existing plan? And then they shut up. Anyway, speaking of Canada, I noticed our guy, Ted Cruz, renounced his Canadian citizenship. It's about time, Ted.
I didn't even see that. Boy, I'm here in Texas, and I missed that one. Did he do that today, or is that recent?
Well, you guys get your news a couple weeks late, I understand. By the way, has that movie Top Gun came to theaters there yet?
Yeah, it came last week.
That's a good one. Yeah, Tom Cruise.
That's not new?
You guys need to get up to speed a little bit. That achy, breaky heart, has that been playing there yet? The radio. You guys got FM yet?
Yeah.
How about it?
Now, Rodney, we're going to have to get you to move to Texas. You do know that, right?
They got this thing.
So you better watch.
Wonderful. You're
going to
love it.
Hey, I think Texas invented the internet.
Oh, that's right. Well, they're going to have DSL soon and cable. Anyway, you get my point, the stupid Republicans. And now all these Tea Party groups. Oh, that's what I wanted to talk about. Tell me about these Tea Party groups like the Tea Party Express, those losers, and this woman. Hold on, I'm going to get her name. Sent me an email today, my friend. That's right, I received an email from this woman. What's her name? She's got that big Tea Party Patriots group. What's her name? Here it is. Tea Party Patriots Citizen Fund. I got an email from this woman, and her name is Jenny Beth Martin. That's her name. Jenny Beth Martin, the chairman of the Tea Party Patriots Citizens Fund. Oh, she's so happy. So happy that Dave Brat beat Eric Cantor. But when Dave Brat went to her group, hey, how about a little, how about a little love? How about a little help for the effort? They don't even return his call. You know why? Because they said he didn't have a chance. Oh, now that he's won, congratulations, Dave. Dear Rodney Lee, look at Dave Brat. Thanks to the Tea Party, oh, yeah, a historic victory over Eric Cantor. Oh, yeah. We don't like that Eric Cantor. It was a long shot, but, oh, yeah, the Tea Party pulled him through. Please. Please contribute to the Tea Party pay. They're asking me for money, Scott. They didn't even help him. They turned his back, and all the Tea Party groups did. What do you think about that, Scott? What do you think about these people?
Well, I think, you know what? I have thought for a long time, anytime you turn around and take something as good as a bunch of people getting together under the Tea Party mantra, and you have people start trying to organize them and start, you are going to end up every single time, no matter how good your thoughts are, you're going to end up with waste, fraud, and abuse, and you're going to end up with power struggle, and you're going to end up with all that craziness. And I think it's really too bad, because these big groups could be really, really, really helping people. But they're not. And so I'm going to say what I said earlier. If you really want to help a candidate, send the money to the candidate. Don't send the money to these groups. And there are some great groups out there. Let me tell you, I'm fully behind Louis Gohmert's Go Pack. But I would still turn around. I would personally send the money directly to the candidate. Now, Louis Gohmert's got a great thing going on, because Louis is also, while he's supporting candidates with his big pack, is also organizing the grassroots underneath him to help support these candidates that he's going to support here going on in November. And the Tea Party Patriots and the Tea Party, all of these big, large Tea Party groups, they're good for that. They're really good for helping organizing, keeping the people organized. But when it all comes down to it, folks, it's the people that are going to do it. It's you and I who are going to get out and bust our butts for these candidates. We cannot be relying on these big groups. I can't say it enough. Anytime you start to take any kind of concept and start to make an overhead umbrella structure to try and organize, you are going to eventually end up with waste, fraud, and abuse. You have it in a business. If you go down and you open up a pizza restaurant, and you've got a couple of years behind your belt and your pizza restaurant's doing really good, so you decide to make a chain, and you make a chain, and pretty soon you've got a corporation going on, I guarantee you you're going to have a whole lot more waste, fraud, and abuse by the time you get 10 years down the line up in your corporation, your corporate system. The bigger it gets, the worse you get. That's why I say the federal government cannot micromanage, because that's all it is a great big corporation at the top, and you've got waste, fraud, and abuse. And there's my opinion on that point. There you go, Rodney.
Well, all right. So what's the? Let's talk about the news for a minute. You want to? What about this Rand Paul? He just got torn. You know what I'm saying? He just got torn by the Washington Times today. I noticed, saying that he has joined the amnesty movement. He came right back, and he said that they're crazy. He's not for amnesty. He's for immigration reform. But as everybody knows, and as I articulated earlier, immigration reform is nothing but amnesty. He keeps saying, I'm not for amnesty. And the Washington Times, which is not a hack group, has come right out and said, look, you're for amnesty, dude. What's with this Rand Paul guy? What's your take on it, Scott?
Well, you know, Rodney, he's trying to get elected. He's trying to get that. He's playing that exact same game. And I've liked some things that Rand Paul did. I liked when he stood with Ted Cruz on the floor of the Senate and filibustered, although I said they should have just kept going until they couldn't stand anymore. I was kind of disappointed they both gave up. But you know what? Neither side is going to get anywhere on this immigration policy until they separate immigration from border security. And I'm going to talk to both sides here for a second. Until you separate immigration from border security, you're not either on either side going to get what you want. I guarantee you this, and Smokey and I had this discussion, I believe, while we were at the convention. If we would get borders secured, locked down, you would have a lot more peaceful, better conversation about trying to figure out what's got to be done for immigration. Now, we're going to have Sid Miller on this show here in a few weeks. Sid Miller's got his own immigration reform. Such a common sense, excellent program in my entire life that actually could make both sides very, very happy, believe it or not. But we're not ever even going to get there until they seal a border. If I were a politician in Washington, D.C., if I were a politician in Austin, you wouldn't hear any words out of my mouth except for, I don't want to hear anything about immigration until we seal the border. Nothing about immigration until we seal the border. Don't even try to discuss it, seal the border. We're trying to put both of those things into one bill, and they're both two entirely different things. They're totally discussion. Now, I know that our immigration policy is messed up. How is it messed up? Well, number one, we're not enforcing the laws that we've got. That's one way it's messed up. Another way it's messed up is we got people that are jumping in line of people that are really trying to immigrate correctly. That's how it's messed up. We could talk all day long about how immigration policy is messed up in this country. But you cannot do anything until you steal that border. Because we're watching here in Texas, the floodgates are open, folks, and they are pouring across the border. And it's being done on purpose. In Mexico City, they are putting the word out, come across now. And they are doing it. We got hundreds of thousands of kids pouring across the borders into this without even their parents. They're sitting in big rooms with nothing what to do with them. They're taking these guys over to Arizona and dumping them off. This is insane. Close the border. Back to you, Rodney.
Well, here's the problem, dude. The let's just take Louie Gohmert. He has had a piece of legislation forever sitting there that is just that. It says very simply, secure the border, and I don't want to talk about anything else. And it sits there, and it sits there, and it sits there. And John Boehner won't bring it up for a debate. He won't bring it up for a vote. And if it did, it's not going to get up for a debate. It's not going to get up for a vote in the Senate, Scott. That's why I say we're fighting against our own party, okay? And that's fine and dandy, but these guys are not interested in border security. Why? Because they're not interested in stopping illegal immigration. They are for illegal immigration, Scott. The Chamber of Commerce is for illegal immigration. The Republican Party is for illegal immigration. Why? Because big business is for illegal immigration. They always have been. The Republican Party has always been for illegal immigration, going back to the beginning of time. Why? For the illegal labor? Well, of course. But because it suppresses all wages. Now, a lot of people run around and they say, why on earth so many Americans, young people, and large swaths of the middle class, Democrats, working people, working guys and gals, why are they turning away from capitalism and voting for candidates, voting for a president who seem to be anti-capitalist, who seem to be socialist in nature, who seem to be spouting and spewing Marxist rhetoric, who seem to be anything but capitalist? Why are there so many Americans turning their backs on capitalism? Well, I will tell you, Scott Osborne, and the four other people listening to this broadcast, it's because the Republican Party has done a crapola job in including, over the last, 30 years, and including the middle class in sharing the wealth whenever there is a great surge in the economy of this country. Every time there has been, there's been three fairly good across-the-board tax cuts in the last 30 years, approximately 30 years. There was the Reagan tax cuts of the 80s. There was the Clinton Gingrich, if you will, tax cuts of the 90s. And there were the Bush tax cuts of the, I don't know how you say it, the 2000s, the O's, the aughts. I'll call them the aughts. Okay? And in each case, Reagan, Clinton, Bush, in each case, there was a massive, massive amount of growth in the economy. I don't care what liberals tell you. The facts are there. Massive amount of growth, massive amount of money came into the Treasury, record amounts, and there was a massive amount of capital freed up for investment. Okay, that's how it's supposed to work. That's how it worked. However, in each case, the Federal Reserve, through the chairman, raised interest rates on the auspice that it would curb inflation. Okay? Well, it didn't curb inflation. What it did was tamp down wages every time. So, what happened? Well, the upper crust, the upper 10%, did great. And I know I sound like a liberal, but I'm not.
I'm just telling you what happened. A lot of people got to enjoy those economic booms. But guess who didn't? Middle-class wage earners. Those wages are stagnant, Scott, and they have been stagnant. Now, after 30 years, the middle class looks around and says, you know what? Capitalism hasn't worked out too well for us. Everybody's kicking ass but us. Can you blame them? I don't blame them. We have got to fix our monetary policy. We have got to stop this insane floating of the value of the dollar, or we are going to F up capitalism in America. And that is a fact. We got to stop it, and Republicans have to do it. Because Democrats are happy about this. Democrats would be fine with two tiers of Americans, the rich and the poor. They are happy with Animal Farm. Some pigs are more equal than others. They're going for that. The Republicans need to stabilize the dollar. Now imagine for a moment, Scott. Get with me on this. Imagine if the government were to be put in charge, or just decided one day that they were going to be in charge of deciding how long an hour was. Instead of an hour being 60 minutes long, the government now is going to decide how long an hour is. And they weren't going to tell you. They're just going to up and decide how long an hour is. Don't worry. We're just going to tell you. All right? This month it's 30 minutes. Next month it might be 3 weeks. Don't know. It might be an hour long this week. Might be 45 minutes. Might be 2 minutes long next month. What would happen, Scott? What would happen to business?
We'd be a mess.
I'll tell you what would happen. It would be a mess. It would freeze. You wouldn't know what to pay people. How could you pay people? You couldn't. You would drive their wages down so low. Because you would have to. You'd have to drive their wages into the ditch. And you couldn't hire people. You couldn't give them any sort of raise. Because what if next week the government decided that an hour was 15 minutes long? You'd go, holy shit, I owe that guy $1 million. Business could not plan. You could not open a new business. You could not forecast. And yet, we let the government do that with the value of a dollar. Well, how the hell is that any different, Scott, than letting them decide the value of time? It's not different. And yet we let the government, through the Federal Reserve, float the value of a dollar. It's insane. I mean, it is nuts what we do. And we sit around and wonder why the middle class feels so disenfranchised. We wonder why they turn their backs on the Republicans. Hell, we know what the Democrats are. They're a bunch of Marxists. They're a bunch of socialists. They're a bunch of collectivists that just go, hey, everybody should be the same at the end of the day. At the end, when the whistle blows, everybody should be the same. They're fine with it, except us. Of course, the leaders will be the 1%.
Well, and you know, Rodney, I'm glad you brought all that up, because next Thursday we're going to have a very special guest, a good friend, somebody that you and I both respect a lot, Rich Lowry with Put Growth First. You can search Put Growth First on Facebook and find his webpage. Let me tell you, one of the smartest men I know is going to be our guest next week, Rich Lowry. And let me tell you, I'm looking forward to this because every time I get done listening and having Rich Lowry as a guest on the show, I have to go back and I have to listen to the show three times and take notes. I always feel like I've walked out of a university course on economics when I sit and listen to Rich Lowry. And we're going to discuss this because it is a great big problem. They view the Federal Reserve they view wage increase as inflation. And you can look at the charts and you can go way back and see where growth was going, and then all of a sudden wages stagnate and they're not getting any better. And so we want to get his word out. So I'm glad you brought that up, Rodney.
Well, I don't know how I swerved into it, but I do know this. I wish, you know, he's got his flaws, but I wish Ron Paul would be president for 1 year. In fact, I wish he'd be king for 1 year. And just audit the Fed, see where everything's going, get rid of these bankers in the cabinet. Is it any coincidence that Goldman Sachs has never been doing any better than they ever could in the last couple of years? I mean, these guys, they engineered TARP, they engineered all the bank bailouts, and they basically were giving themselves money and their partners overseas money. To this day, we have no idea where most of that stimulus, that trillions of dollars of stimulus money and bailout money went. We don't know where it went. We don't know. And these guys make up Obama's cabinet. I mean, you want to know where the 1% is? Take a look at Obama's cabinet. The thing I am most in shock by is that the percentage of African-American voters still vote Democrat. It is, to me, that is shocking. The club that is doing the worst under Obama is African-Americans. They are just getting their clocks cleaned. And yet, I mean, is it that important to be on food stamps? Is it that important? Is skin color that? When does skin color stop trumping your own interest, your family's interests? I tell you, I just don't get it. I honestly can see the pride in America. I can absolutely understand the pride of having the first black president. I didn't vote for Obama, but you know when he won in 2008? I wasn't the only guy. I wasn't the only white person that felt a great amount of pride that we had elected a black president and we could put a giant chunk of that history behind us. And I can't sit here and tell you how black people felt, but I can imagine some of it. But you know what? The thrill is gone, my friend. And it's time to say, okay, that's behind us. Let's, moving on, as they say in the movie business. But anyway, there's a couple of other things in the news. Scott, you got anything? Because I've got about four or five things.
I am just now opening up what's out there. Go ahead.
No, it's all. I was just going to say it's always fun to talk to you about the news. I know that there's been some really crazy stuff. I mean, some really, really nutty, crazy stuff behind. Well, you know, the David Brat thing was crazy enough. I mean, did you see that coming? I didn't.
No.
But beyond that, there was some really funny stuff. You know, in Washington, D.C., which is a crazy place because it acts like a small, the District of Columbia, it kind of acts like a small little state. Do you know what I'm saying? It's almost like its own little,
yeah, I don't know. I don't know how you would describe it. It's not really a state. You know, they don't have their own voting or anything that matters. But they do have their own, you know, city council. They got their own mayor. They've got their own. They got their own agenda. They are really, really doing well in terms of revenue. The revenue just pours into this since Obama took over because there is so much growth in government that Washington, D.C. is just awash. I mean awash in revenue. They have more money. And yet, guess what? They have budget deficits. They spent it all. So, guess what they got to do, buddy? Raise taxes. So, the District of Columbia is looking at a 5.75% sales tax on gyms, yoga studios, and other health club services as part of its fiscal 2015 budget. Basically, a tax on healthy lifestyles. Other services that would be subject to the tax include bowling alleys, billiards playing, car washes, carpet cleaning, home water service delivery. Now, let me tell you, Scott, I've been to Washington, D.C., and trust me, most of the residents there will not be affected by this. They will be lucky to raise $128. I don't see any of these fat farts going to gyms or yoga studios or getting their carpets cleaned, and none of them are getting water delivered. They should tax crack, okay? They could balance that budget, pal. Some crack tax. They could call it the Mary and Barry tax, I guess. I don't know.
Now, anyway, Capitol Hill is never going to let that happen. You know that.
I don't know why I found that so funny, but I just did. You know, the health tax. So, like, wow, good luck with that one, guys. I've never seen a fatter area of the country, a more slovenly part of the country than Washington, D.C. Oh, well. You got anything? I've got plenty more if you don't.
Well, yeah, I know that we're watching Iraq fall again. Iraq's breaking up. The Kurds have taken the northern city of Kirkuk, and they're getting ready to march into Baghdad and capture Baghdad. So all that hard work we went to is just all totally unraveling. And you know, I a lot of these things just come down to just some common sense. If you stand tall and you stand firm and you stand strong, you win the battle. If you stand and you look weak, you lose the battle. And it comes down to that, about that simple. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, the thing about Iraq is I always look at this and I say to myself, follow the money. You know? Follow the money, Scott Osborne. Who is going to benefit from this? Who's going to benefit from Iraq falling? Now, today, I see the president, who's responsible for this, by the way. I mean, he had the chance to make a deal to leave a residual force there that would have prevented this, probably. Did he do it? No, he didn't do it. Why? Well, he must not have any interest in Iraq not falling into the hands of the Taliban and the terrorists and whatnot. So I'm thinking to myself, well, he's got to have an agenda, right? So who is going to benefit from this? Well, today I see him on TV saying that they're going to respond. They're going to do something. In other words, they're going to go back in there. I think he's going to go back in there, personally. I think he's going to actually send, do his own surge. You know? Who's he going to send in there? I think that he's got a deal, some sort of deal going on. I'm trying to figure out who that might.
You think him and Dick Cheney got a deal going on? I think him and Dick Cheney have been meeting. And they got some sort of deal going on. I'm sure. Some sort of deal with Halliburton. You know, all you got to do, Scott, all you got to do is throw the word Halliburton in there. And I'm telling you, the phones light up. And I mean, people are so crazy about the word Halliburton. You just got to follow the money. And I'm saying it's Dick Cheney, Halliburton, and President Obama. What do you think about that?
You know what? There's a team and a half for you.
Well, listen to this.
All right.
This is legit. I was just goofing around there, but this is legit. Edward Snowden, our favorite spy, he leaked a story last month that the, and this comes from, I guess, Wikipedia. He leaked everything through Wikipedia, right? Or where? WikiLeaks, right? Didn't it come through there?
Right.
He leaked a story, you know, he leaked information that the NSA can listen to your conversations. And this, to me, this sounds crazy. He leaked that the NSA can listen to your conversations through your iPhone, even when it's turned off. Now, isn't that nuts? Now, everybody thought that was crazy, but a team of security experts, and I mean experts, these guys are the experts of all experts, they tested this, and they confirmed that it's true. There is a hack, apparently a fairly simple hack that can be administered through Apple's iPhone software to where the NSA could actually listen to you even after you've turned, you know, once they get into your iPhone, even after you've turned it off, they can still listen to what's going on in your house through your iPhone's microphone. Isn't that insane? I mean, do you think that's
enough? Oh, it's great.
Yeah. So, and I've been wondering, who's been waking me up in the middle of the night complaining about my snoring? You know, because I always keep the iPhone. This is damn NSA guys yelling at me.
Well, all I know, Rodney, is I could only dream that Barack Obama was listening to me on a daily basis. He might learn something. Hey, Barack, I got a few things to tell you. I hope NSA's listening to every broadcast we do.
You're going to get toted off, buddy. I'll tell you. You're right.
Uh-oh. I see the black helicopters coming. Come get me out.
Okay, there's a story. Let me tell you this one. Because this one to me is funny on the face of it. But I've got to read the headline. I've got to read the first sentence of this story. I have to read it in my best Maxwell Smart voice. You remember Maxwell Smart from Get Smart?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, this is a story from Pittsburgh. It's about police. They found some drug dealers. They busted some drug dealers in the home of a former NFL player. And here was the first sentence from... Here was the first sentence from that report. I'm gonna say it like Maxwell Smart. Just outside Pittsburgh, in a house owned by a former NFL player, police have seized 1,500 bricks of heroin, 16 firearms, $100,000 in cash, two luxury vehicles, some Cuban cigars, and a live chicken. That was the actual report. I don't know why. I just thought that had to be Maxwell Smart reporting that. And I just thought, well, there's no Boy Scout with a pea shooter. I thought that was going to be the next line. Why did they feel compelled to list the live chicken with all that other stuff? I don't know. A Cuban cigar and a live chicken, Chief, at Checkpoint Chicky. Would you believe a live chicken, Scott? Okay, I'm done.
Are you being silent because I'm just off the rails?
Sorry, I was talking. I had myself on mute. I thought you heard my laughing. Teresa B's got a story in here in the chat room that I'm getting a big kick out of. I don't know if you've been following the chat room, but they got these blankets, these red bullet blankets, $1,000 a piece, and they want to buy them for the schools to keep for school shootings. And let me tell you, I'm not quite sure exactly how they're going to work that out, because in general, when a school shooting happens, nobody knows it's coming. They're going to have to, I guess, each kid have a blanket somewhere stuck inside their desk. Oh, but I'll tell you, I got some better solutions than that blanket. If they wouldn't make sure all the bad guys know that there's no guns in the schools, let some of these teachers be armed, might do a little bit more and be a little bit less expensive than all these red blankets. But you should see this picture of these kids being covered in these blankets. And I, you know, if I was a shooter down the hall, these red blankets, let's put it this way, Rodney, the only way these red blankets are going to save anybody is if the guy's shooting them up from the ceiling, if he's hanging out of the top of the ceiling and shooting down, because they're definitely not covering the sides or the around the kids, and if you were shooting from down the hall, it wouldn't do anything. But they're $1,000 a piece. Some company in Oklahoma is selling them.
Did they ever think maybe one bulletproof door that they can lock from the inside? I don't know. I'm just thinking out loud here. Or maybe, just maybe, an armed guard. I'm just saying that, buddy. I'm nuts.
Well, and you know, we remember when we had the after that school shooting happened somewhere, there was one of our Marines decided to go stand out in front of the school in his military army uniform because his kids were there at the school. And the liberals went crazy. They didn't like that. They made him leave. You know, common sense stuff like that just doesn't go over the liberals too well. They're not versed too well on common sense.
Well, you know, we have armed guards at the bank guarding our money. We have armed guards over there at the courthouse guarding our judges. We have armed guards, of course, at Congress. We don't want any of those people getting hurt. But over at the school where our little children are, oh, it's open season, friends. Just open season because, you know, shoot a kid, get a new gun law. That's our new liberal mantra. I have a story here, Scott, that may upset someone like you, person of the cloth, but it is everywhere. I'm sure you've seen it. And it is a story from the 1960s, and it is just all over the Internet. It's a little graphic in nature, but I think because we're on the Internet, I think late at night here, well past the dinner hour, as they used to say. Excuse me in advance.
I'm afraid.
The great thing about being a Christian, the greatest thing about being a Christian, Scott, and I've always said this, a lot of people think, there's a lot of course, Christians are always attacked, and the reason that they're attacked is because we're such nice people. We never attack back. We never behead you. We never run at you with a dynamite strapped to our chest, never do anything crazy like that. We're always nice. Turn the other cheek, et cetera, et cetera. And it sounds like there's a vacuum on in here. Is that true? What is that? I'm sorry, I was distracted. The greatest thing, and people say, ah, you Christians, you think you're perfect. And that's not true. Au contraire, we know we're not perfect. It's just the opposite. We are not perfect, but we are forgiven. And that, my friend, is one of the great, great, maybe the great perk about being a Christian. You're forgiven. And perhaps I take that to the extreme once in a while. I may be guilty of knowing all too well that I'm forgiven sometimes, and perhaps this is the case right now. You'll forgive me in advance if you don't mind. This story is from the 60s. I'll give you a great example. Tina is in the office here with me. Tina, that's the ugliest shirt I've ever seen. Forgiven. See that? Boom. I'm forgiven. It's that easy, Scott. Let me tell you a quick story. My name is Rodney, as everybody knows that knows me. I don't have any kids of my own. I don't have any original kids. I raise used ones. I haven't raised any from scratch, although I think I'd be pretty good at it. I really do. My sisters, however, they've got a lot of kids. They feel like they can just pop them out willy-nilly. And their first three kids were all boys, three boys each. It's amazing. Now, I was always trying to get them to name them after me, Scott. They never do, right? And but this last time, my older sister came up with a pretty good excuse. She said, well, our first son is named Daniel, and that's the name out of the Bible. We're going to name all of our kids, give all of our kids biblical names. And of course, Rodney, not in the Bible. So it was kind of a bummer, but a good excuse nonetheless. But she did say, Scott, that I could go through the Bible and pick out the name for the second kid. Don't you think that was kind of cool?
Yeah, that was cool enough.
Yeah. So the other day, I'm playing with a little Deuteronomy, and we go to the zoo, and we're walking by the rhino cage, and as luck would have it, the rhinos are doing what rhinos do. You know what I'm talking about? And you got to be careful with these kids, Scott, as you know, because they pick up on everything. You make a little mistake, and you pay for it because they pick up and they remember. They only remember the stuff you don't want them to remember. And my sister is a zealot. I mean, she goes nuts, and I'm getting in big trouble all the time. And sure enough, we go by the rhino cage, and the rhinos are in there, you know, mating. And little Deuteronomy, we went there with his. With his brother Exodus, and we're in there, and he says to me, he says, Uncle Rodney, what are they doing? I said, little dude, I call him dude. I said, well, one of them broke his leg, and the other one's pushing to the hospital. You know, which I thought was pretty cool. And he looks up at me and he says, that's what's going on with the rhinos? And I said, yeah. And he goes, now I think one of them's getting primaried. and then he looks at me and he says, forgiven. Thank you. So anyway. Back to this story in the news. He's a little Christian. And
hey, Rodney, there are 10 people in the United States named Rodney Bible.
Really?
Yeah.
Get out of here.
Looked it up.
Well, that's insane. I feel bad for them. Anyway, this story is from 1965, okay? In 1965... there was a dude, he was a neurologist, and you know the 60s, Scott, you know what it was, it was a free-for-all. These guys were nuts. There was a neurologist, Dr. something. He was trying to teach dolphins to speak. Did you read about this? It was like that movie, Day of the Dolphin, but this was real. I'm not sure if they
yeah, I remember that.
Or something. Yeah. But this was for real. This actually happened. He's trying to teach a dolphin to speak, got some sort of government grant, 1965. And they go out some island and they built this big laboratory, and he had an assistant, 23-year-old Margaret Howe. He's an assistant to this neurologist, and this neurologist, his idea was he was going to sequester this dolphin named Peter with this Margaret Howe, 23-year-old, quite attractive young woman. So he does, and he has them live together, and she's only out of the water 1 hour every 24 hours. She's got a desk in there. They swim around. They spend all their time together, and she's teaching this dolphin how to speak because they can make human-like sounds by, you know, pushing air out their blowhole. You know, they can actually mimic human sounds. And sure enough, the dolphin starts to, you know, say certain, or, you know, kind of not say, but, you know, make sounds like human words, and they start to get somewhere. And they become very, you know, close friends, as it were, the dolphin and the Margaret Howe. Well, you know how dolphins are, okay? We've all heard these stories about dolphins. And the dolphin starts with the sexual advances on young Miss Margaret Howe and really gets aggressive with her. Now, the reason we know that is because last week she's come out with a book called I Had a Sexual Relationship with a Dolphin. Now, she says that the dolphin fell in love with her, okay? And the dolphin was so persistent that she eventually gave in to him, if you know what I'm saying, because she says it was easier to give in to him and then go on with the experiment than to fight him all day. So she would give in to him, and then they'd go on with the experiments, and that's how their lives kind of went. Well, eventually the grant runs out, the experiment's over, and they ship the dolphin, you know, to San Diego, to SeaWorld or something, and she goes on with her life. Well, guess what, Scott? 2 weeks later, the dolphin, Peter, commits suicide. And the veterinarian rules his cause of death as a broken heart. I'm not kidding you. This is all true. And that's my final story. He died of a broken heart. Apparently, she was able to teach him how to say, hey, what's a nice girl like you doing in an ocean like this? That was the last thing she taught him.
Oh,
and that, my friend, is what passes for news, okay? Star-kissed. You know what I'm saying? Sorry, Charlie. But only the most special tuna get to be star-kissed. Oh, God. I'm telling you, I don't know how I make a living when the real news is funnier than me.
What are we going to do with you?
this is almost the top of the hour. I didn't make that up. Hey, you know who didn't call in this week? Our friend Emily.
She didn't call in. She wasn't in the chat room either.
She probably started listening to the news there and said, nah, I don't think so. Okay. What haven't we covered?
Sorry about that. We had a noise out there, so I had to mute. My brother-in-law just started up the truck. Well, we're 10 minutes up, so this is that time of the night where we talk about the other shows that we've got going on that don't end in stories like that one, Rodney. But we do want to mention again Rich Lowry, and we want to send him a great big shout-out. He got married this last weekend, fine lady, which is pretty nice. But we're going to have Rich on this next Thursday. We want everybody to remember to tune in. It's going to be a great show. I've got a huge respect for the man. He always leaves me feeling really, really stupid by the time we're done because he is just so, so smart. And he really does understand economic policy. He does understand monetary policy. And it's going to be a great show. And then, of course, we don't want to forget Tuesday nights we've got American Sovereignty Radio talking about sovereignty issues, state sovereignty, local sovereignty, parental sovereignty, national sovereignty, and everything in between with Dan Wilson and Jennifer Montrose. We always have a great, great time. And then coming up this Saturday, we've got Saturday Symposium with Dan Wilson. And Dan and I always talk about history and politics. We always go back. You know, Rodney, we always bring up something that you brought up tonight,
Which way are they going across the border? Are people trying to, are they trying to kill themselves getting into Mexico? No, they're not. They're trying to kill themselves getting into this country. They do the same thing down in Cuba, those 90 miles of shark-infested waters. Which way are the people swimming? And I always ask that as a question to most liberals that I talk to, which you know, if you like your socialist system, all you got to do is look at Cuba, which way are the people swimming? And when the Berlin Wall fell down, which way did the people run? Did they run from west to east, or did they run from east to west? And Dan and I talk a lot of stuff about stuff like that on Saturday's symposium. And then, of course, we've got Friday. We've got Ladies Bible Class. Been teaching that class for 5 years. Continued to teach it down here in Texas when we moved. The ladies gather at the table there in Springville, California, with the computer and listen to the class on Blog Talk Radio, and I sit at the table here in Texas, and we do that. And that's what's going on. We got some great things coming up. We're lining up some great guests. We're in contact with Carl Pittman, running for sheriff down in Harris County. Manny, you want to talk? You're going to like this guy, Rodney. This is one of those people that just says it how it is. About a 6'2" black man, a 6'4" black man that I would not want to beat up, that I wouldn't want to try and beat up. Talk about some muscles and an intellect to go along with those giant muscles. And he says his tagline is he would like to be the one that put the handcuffs on Barack Obama. And he's wrote a book, and we're going to have him on here soon. Looking forward to that and quite a few. So with that, I'll pass it back to you, Rodney.
Well, again, another great show in the can, Mr. Scott. Now, I got to ask you a very serious question, and I want a very serious answer to this. I don't care if you take a couple of seconds to answer. Did I or did I not quote Scripture tonight? And if I did, why didn't you immediately stop the presses and hold the mail and explain to our audience exactly which testament I spoke from and specifically which Scripture I was quoting?
Well, actually, you did get into a little Scripture tonight, but I couldn't give you a single Scripture to go along with it because, actually, you quoted the whole theme of the Bible tonight. Do you know that?
I did.
You quoted the whole theme.
I know that. And, I just wanted to see if you...
And the whole theme is forgiveness. And, you know, I forgive you for the crazy story that you told at the end. I didn't forgive you ahead of time, but I will forgive you now for the crudeness of the last story. But it is important, folks. And let me tell you, it applies to what we're doing now because, I see this a lot in the grassroots. And we get on different teams. We saw this in the presidential primary. We had Team Perry and we had Team Ron Paul and we had Team Herman Cain and Team Gingrich. And a lot of times, you know, we have some disagreements. But when it all comes down to it, after the primaries are over, you got to learn to forgive people and get on. We're all on the same team and we're all trying to fight this battle. And it's not an easy battle, but we got to win it. And it's going to take every single one of us. And we don't always agree. We don't always agree with what people do, and we don't always agree with what people think. But when it comes down to it, the majority of us agree on about 99% of all the issues, especially when it comes to the basics. And we got to win this battle. It's important. Because, I'll tell you, folks, the left would like to take away my right to even talk about the Bible, the far left, not the Democrats. There's a bunch of Democrats. There's a lot of good people that are Democrats. But we got to separate out that the far left has taken over their party. And they still only poll at 12 to 15% in most polls. They've been polling that way for a long time. I don't believe the American people agree with the majority of the direction that the president wants to go. I just think that they just really don't know which direction he really is. I don't believe they know where the end game is. But forgiveness is important, Rodney. It's hugely important. And we're going to do that more often. Rodney and I are going to talk more often about a little bit of Bible thrown into this. This is Contending for Truth Radio. And it was, I started it out as for the sole purpose of using it for ladies' Bible class on Friday. So it is Bible-based. And we're going to be bringing some of that in there. I pass it back to you.
Well, I can only say this. There are still some primaries going on. I know not that many. Most of them are done. But there's one going on June
let's see, when is it? When is that primary in the 4th District in New York? Excuse me, June 24th.
Correct.
The guy that we had on this show.
Frank Scaturo.
Frank Scaturo. It's the same situation that we had here with this David Pratt going up against Cantor, Eric Cantor. Now, it is not as high profile because Eric Cantor was a majority leader, but you know what? It's just as important. It's a vote. It's a vote in the House of Representatives, and it's a similar situation because you got a primary where you got one candidate who's a rhino, who's one of these guys that is just a political hack being backed up by the establishment, being backed up by bad money, who is going up against Frank Scaturo, who just like, just exactly like David Bratt, is a university professor. David Bratt was a professor of economics, a staunch believer in free markets, and adherence to the Constitution, a constitutional conservative to the end. Well, guess what? Frank Scaturo is a university law professor. He teaches constitutional law. He passes on his passion for the founding documents to future generations, to the future leaders of this country, hopefully. And he has years of community service, a lifetime Republican, a hardcore conservative. He doesn't go under the banner of Tea Party, but that's what he is. He's a Tea Party conservative. He believes in liberty, the Constitution. He believes in freedom, and he believes in limited government. He believes in stopping this ridiculous spending, this deficit spending. It is ruining the future opportunity for the American dream for kids and grandkids, for future generations. It is. It is putting the damper on the opportunities that we've had. Look, Scott and I, we had our shot. We had a great life. Scott, you had a great life. I did too. I'm not saying our lives are over, but you know what I'm talking about. 30, 40 years of really just looking out on the horizon and going, man, it's wide open, man. We can do anything we want. You can run off to Grenada and be a gun runner. I can, dive into whatever I want to do. And it's just the opportunities there. I wonder if kids have a shot at the dream. I mean, they really do. I wonder about that. Well, you got to help out Frank Scaturo now. Let's keep that momentum going. He's in the 4th District in New York. Oh, well, I don't live in that district. I don't care. A vote is a vote. Look, these congressmen, they don't represent their districts anymore. They represent all of America. When they make a vote against amnesty, that's for you. I don't care if it's in Texas, California, North Dakota, or the 4th District in New York. They're casting a vote against amnesty for you and your kids and your family. Frank is against Obamacare. He is a staunch opponent of Common Core. He wants rid of it. So go over to frankscaturo.com. Frank Scaturo for Congress. He's my guy. And the primary is on June 23rd. Okay? Our guy Ken Brolin is over there. He's crazy. He's a nut. But he's the kind of nut you want to join up. You want to get on Team Scaturo. All right. I think I've said enough. FrankScaturo.com. Throw him a couple bucks. Why not? Or you'll volunteer to make some phone calls if you don't want to give money. Oh, you're too cheap. Well, you're not too cheap to make a few phone calls, are you? Am I being too harsh, Scott? Wrap this thing up.
You're not being too harsh.
Before I piss everybody off.
There you go. And we've got about 30 seconds, Rodney, so we're going to go ahead and wind it up. Say goodbye. Thank everybody in the chat room. Thank my friend Laura Klein, who has been listening also as well. She didn't find the chat room. We're going to have to help her find the chat room next time. We love her to death, but we're going to let everybody go with a very special song, very dear to my heart. Last weekend, it made me feel like I was really a Texan. Let's let her rip.
The stars at night are big and bright. Deep in the heart of Texas, the prairie sky is wide and high. Deep in the heart of Texas, the sage in bloom is like perfume. Deep in the heart of Texas reminds me of the one I love. Deep in the heart of Texas. In the heart of Texas, the cowboys cry, "Ki-yip-pi-yi!" Deep in the heart.